now with over 25 years of experience integrating mental health and spirituality, the author of Reclaiming Authenticity, When Ancestors Weep, and Redeeming the Bereaved. Here is Dr. James Houck.
Alrighty, good evening, everybody, wherever you are in the world at this time. Welcome to Reclaiming Authenticity, helping you find your courage to reclaim that which has always been in you. In fact, helping you find the courage to reclaim that which you have always been. Not just what's in you, but who you authentically are and being able to reclaim that. And I'll be talking more about that specific subject here as the show goes on tonight. A lot of good stuff to talk about. We're going to talk about genealogy. We're going to talk about just a little bit on Sir Isaac Newton and his contributions to, let's just say apples. And I don't know how much he was into genealogy, but it's just interesting, just everything that he came across in his experiments and so forth, just by paying attention. And that has, you know, a lesson for us here this evening. So I am very happy to be with you here tonight and every other Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And each and every one of these broadcasts are focuses on the integration of spirituality and our mental health. And I place this all within the context of our relationships, the relationship that we have with ourselves, our intrapersonal, the relationship that we have with others, or interpersonal, and certainly our relationship with God and or the divine. I am Dr. James Houck, and if you would like more information about me, or if you just want to leave me your comments about tonight's show, I invite you to visit that website. It's www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity. Or if you want to get on my personal website, it is www.reclaiming-authenticity.com. So either one will get your message to me. And I always enjoy responding to people. And I appreciate also your comments and your any questions to follow up on, as well as any like insights or any like suggestions for future shows that you might like to hear. So on that note, even if you would like to call in tonight and be part of the show, I invite you to call in with any insights or questions or just general conversations on tonight's topic, Sir Isaac Newton's bump, B-U-M-P. Sir Isaac Newton's bump, watch for falling apples. And if you want to join in the conversation tonight, just call that toll-free number. It's 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And that will get you right on. Now, just in case, you know, if you cannot spend the entire hour with me this evening, this broadcast will be posted on the BBS Radio website. So you can go back in and, you know, listen, or you can go back into the archives and listen to previous shows that you might have missed. And these podcasts are also available for download on iTunes, Audible, Spotify, and Amazon Music. As well as this show also replays on WNEW 102.7 FM HD3 out of New York on the weekends. So now, for those of you who might be tuning in for the first time, just want to say welcome aboard. And I just want to share with you, because I know new listeners are always tuning in. And I always just like to make sure everybody's on the same page and you just know where I'm coming from, that I just share, you know, with everybody on these broadcasts that I have two deep-seated beliefs that have really shaped my outlook on reclaiming our authentic selves as souls. In fact, this same philosophy is what I share with clients, my clinical clients, regarding how and why I work with them the way that I do. The first one is that I believe that people have the answers within themselves. Because you know the kind of life you want to live. You know how you feel. You know what brings you peace and joy and hope. And you know what doesn't. And sometimes we're in the wrong place at the wrong time and something traumatic happens to us. Or we thought that maybe we've dealt with an experience in our past, only to discover later that those unresolved issues keep popping up again and again. Or we keep making the same mistakes over and over again. So, and then at that, whenever that happens, we have to go back and make amends. And if we need to find forgiveness or ask for forgiveness or whatever we would need to do to resolve those issues. But at any rate, when those things pop up in our lives, that we have to take care of them. We just can't ignore them. So that's the first one. The second deep-seated belief is that I believe that everybody, and I truly mean this, everybody that comes into this world with what they already need for in this life in terms of their giftedness, in terms of their talents, their skills, their graces, their personalities, and so forth. In other words, the very best parts of who you are, as well as that potential of knowing yourself as a soul. Because you see, even though we may have had some awful or traumatic experiences, we may tend to stop believing that we are full of value and dignity and worth, as well as we may think we need to hide our giftedness so that other people will not exploit this. Well, either way, we wind up going through life thinking from or speaking from or living from a place of woundedness instead of a place of healing and grace and love and peace and wholeness. After all, we are all these things and so much more. We just don't fully realize who we truly are yet and who we are becoming. And the reason for this is that with all of our experiences that we take in through our five senses of sight, sound, taste, touch, smell, these are all good, but they're also limited. You know, these are empirical evidences that we can measure and interpret by and through our mind. And as a result, we convince ourselves that, well, if I can see it, then that must be true. If we can hear it, well, then that must be true. And if I can touch it, then that must be true, as well as the other sensory-related experiences we believe to be the end-all, be-all truth. And yet, these sensory perceptions are limited because whatever is taken in through the brain, the mind comes in and interprets what we have seen or heard or tasted or touched or smelled, and it's based on our limited experiences, not realizing that the holiest and the most transformative experiences touch the soul. So again, if there's only one thing that you take away from tonight's broadcast, I hope it's this. Don't go off searching for something that you already are. Discover who you are and be that soulful presence in the world. I'll say that one more time. Don't go off searching for something you already are. Discover who you are and be that soulful presence in the world. Because the full realization of who we are as souls liberates us. It gives us such a freedom, more than what we define or the world defines as freedom. You know, even in the Gospels, Jesus himself said that the truth sets us free. You know, and in that one passage, he's making a point, you know, to have us look at a higher truth, that we are all souls already connected to God since the beginning, and we are not exclusively the body, but also embracing the fullness and the ability to live as souls in this world. And elsewhere, one of my favorite passages in the Bible, when God was calling Jeremiah to be a prophet, he spoke these words to him. He said, Jeremiah, look, before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. Before you were born, I set you apart. I appointed you as a prophet to the nations, and then it goes on from there. But I like that part. You know, before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. And that's a hard concept for us to really grasp in reality, you know, that we existed prior to taking on the physical, you know, a body that gives form to our formless souls. In fact, we often limit ourselves to settling for the form, you know, that empirical evidence that we can measure through the form, how much something weighs or what color it is, and so on and so forth. But there's a greater, greater truth that goes way beyond our five senses. And as a result, you know, we often give up exploring higher truths because how can you measure the soul with a bathroom scale or, let's say, a radar device or even a tape measure? You just simply can't do it. That's not what those things are designed for because they are limited. So still, the soul is boundless and eternal, and therefore its truths are experienced from life to life, soul to soul. And in previous broadcasts, you know, I often quote from my teacher, Swami Paramananda from the Akhand Paradham Ashram in Haridwar, India. He once shared with me, he says, look, this ocean of worldly existence, as what we experience through our five senses, this ocean gets crossed easily having climbed the highest mountains and the deepest waters and fire. There is nothing but pure consciousness. So don't stay at the bottom of the mountain. Come up the mountain. However, the problem is that you don't leave your old ways of thinking and seeing behind. And once we get a taste of something that is true, that we know, it then compels us to let go of our old ways of thinking. Let go of, well, what I've seen before, I can roughly say I haven't seen it all, or I haven't heard it all. There's greater truths at work. And this is what reclaiming authenticity is all about. You know, I liken it to, it can be summed up in one word, namaste, which roughly translated means, because I see myself as a soul of light. This allows me to greet the lighted soul of who you are, even if you don't see it in yourself. Well, let's go back through history, shall we? And maybe this is physics, you know, physics with a touch of history. Yeah, because as the story goes, you know, we have a person out there, Sir Isaac Newton, and he was born in, I think it was 1643, and he died in the early 1700s, 1727, somewhere around there. And as like I said, as the story goes, he was sitting under an apple tree one day. You know, I don't know if the old boy was tired. I don't know. We just don't know that. But he was sitting, you know, under an apple tree one day when all of a sudden an apple fell from this tree and he saw it. Now, whether or not the apple bopped him on his head, that's been a matter of public opinion to this day. You know, I tend to believe like, okay, he saw the apple fall and then it just like hit him in the head, whatever. However, you know, but following this incident, you know, Sir Isaac Newton wondered if that same force that pulled the apple to the ground, you know, let the apple fall to the earth, was the same force that held the moon in place. Something held the moon out there because the moon wasn't falling to the earth. And since then, you know, the study of gravity and apple trees have become symbols of scientific curiosity. So whether or not this apple bopped him on his head, it caught his attention, and he took it from there. He's like, I wonder, could this be? And the more he started to dig in that scientific curiosity, the more he started to understand what was really going on. So, speaking of trees, if there is one lesson that everybody who searches for a family tree, you know, they learn sooner or later that nobody's family tree is spotless. Nobody's family line is blameless. Just be careful not to shake that tree too hard because you're never going to know who's going to fall out. You know, the falling apple is going to be the least of your worries. But still, when we understand our genealogy and we go back through our own history, we also can discover something fascinating, that the grace of God has never stopped. The grace of God cannot be thwarted, even in the lives of those who have yet to be born, you know, those who are going to follow us, however far out the genealogy goes. I mean, it could be for another 1,000 or 2,000 years. We don't know. but the grace of God will be there. You see, all of us carry within us, as parts of our lineage, we carry the stories. And this is something that I always emphasize with the people I counsel who are trying to get out from under the family stories that keep them emotionally and psychologically tied to their woundedness. So how many of you out there have ever searched your family tree? Have it written down somewhere? Or do you have it saved on a file on your computer? We have all kinds of online family tree searches. We have ancestry.com, familysearch.com, findmypast.com, and genealogybank.com. Okay, and I'm sure there are many, many more. And so there are many websites out there to assist us in finding out more about those who have come before us. Well, even now, we have DNA testing, like that product 23andMe and others that are out there, which shows us our regional backgrounds in terms of our genetic makeup. And these have been gaining popularity over the years. It's kind of like, okay, well, this, according to my DNA, shows that I come from this line of people. So all in all, family trees are fun. They are exciting. And they all have a sense of mystery. And let's be honest, as we're searching our family lines, our family trees, perhaps we hope that we're going to find a famous ancestor, somebody who made a great contribution to society, or one who left their mark in the world in very profound ways. But we can only go back so far. Maybe we can go back to the 1800s or the 1700s or maybe even the 1600s, maybe. And from there, going back any further, the trail can really grow cold depending on who or what you can find. Now, our genealogy goes back much, much further than where these genealogy sites can take us. But let's say that we can trace our family trees back as far as we can, and we run into a few ancestors who were a little shady. All right, no pun intended, okay? But we just run into some people with some questionable backgrounds. And we start digging into the circumstances and the times in which they lived. And perhaps we find that our ancestors may have been overwhelmed to the point that their resiliency was quickly exhausted. Or perhaps it was chipped away over time by relentless oppression. Or maybe our ancestors had to do what they had to do, not being necessarily proud of what they did to survive. And the way they had to defend and raise families or to make ends meet and so on and so forth. And maybe our ancestors didn't always make the best decisions or even consider the impact their decisions had on relationships, especially those of us who had yet to be born. And perhaps our ancestors never considered the additional physical, psychological, emotional, or spiritual burdens that were placed on others because of how they benefited or were burdened. Maybe our ancestors may have abused drugs or alcohol or struggled with other addictions because it was the only perceived available thing they had to hold themselves together, which only then made matters worse for themselves and their families. And still, perhaps we would find our ancestors were unaware of the psychological and emotional roles that they played to unconsciously maintain, back in their day, that daily chaos or that codependency or that confusion and self-sabotaging behaviors that were typically found in families with addictions. Maybe our ancestors attempted or completed suicide because their emotional pain and hopelessness were too great for them to see any other way through their problems. Maybe our ancestors initiated a cycle of physical or emotional or sexual abuse out of their own experience of having once been ridiculed or abused or beaten or shamed. And yet, on the other hand, maybe some of our ancestors may have been the abusers themselves, the ones striking fear in the hearts of others through extortion or greed or manipulation or violence or oppression. Maybe our ancestors were guilty of pulling triggers or exploding bombs that ended the lives of many. Maybe our ancestors turned a blind eye to society's, you know, wounded and so-called insignificant people that were being oppressed and shunned and tortured and killed as their hands held the shovels that opened and closed the earth for mass graves. You know, perhaps as we start shaking that family tree, we also might find that some of our ancestors maybe went along with family and community atrocities to simply get along with those in power. And maybe our ancestors reflected a silent indifference in the face of these atrocities, and they reaped or raped the benefits from systems of oppression, and so on and so on and so forth. You know, you just never know what you're going to find. But, you know, as I said, there's one lesson that we need to take away from whenever we begin our family tree, and that's nobody's family line is spotless. And that's not to label people as good or bad or positive or negative, because people are who they are. Well, I don't know if you've ever had a chance to read genealogies of other people. You know, they're movie stars or whoever. I mean, you can look them up online. But, you know, there's one genealogy that has always fascinated me, and that's the genealogy of Jesus. You know, and the reason why I'm so fascinated by this genealogy is because when I read this account in Matthew's first chapter of his gospel, I'm truly amazed at why would Matthew even include this genealogy in the first place? I mean, because if you know the backstory of all those names, you know, the thing reads like an R-rated version of who's who. I mean, some of the people in the line were guilty of committing all kinds of evil acts. Some were guilty of rape. Some were guilty of murder or lying and cheating and stealing and adultery. Now, some were very kind and loving and righteous. But why did Matthew find it necessary to include this in his good news? Well, there are various interpretations out there regarding the reason and purpose behind Matthew beginning his gospel with this family tree. Maybe it was he just wanted to establish the truth that Jesus came through the kingly line of David. Or maybe it was to show people, you know, what the prophets had spoken about Jesus, that Jesus was fulfilling it. Or, you know, there's still many people out there just, I don't know. I just simply do not know. Well, I want to propose another meaning and purpose of this genealogy, which brings us right into integrating spirituality and mental health. And it's that in looking at the genealogy of Jesus and looking at our own genealogy, understanding who came before us, that in spite of the individuals that were in the family tree of Jesus, it didn't stop Jesus from coming into the world. Like I said, it didn't stop the grace of God. The Spirit of God continued despite human actions and human interactions down through the generations. But you know, when we understand our own genealogy and we go back through our own history, we too are also going to discover that, well, even though there are some shady people back there, you know, it didn't stop the grace of God because here we are. Even in the lines of those who, you know, who have yet to be born, you know, the people who are going to come after us, that grace of God is always going to be there. So don't give up on your family line, you know, however long that genealogy goes, you know, like I said, 1,000, 2,000 years. But regardless how long the lines go, the grace of God will be there. Life finds a way. Yep. And as I said, all of us are part of lineages that carry stories. And this is something that I emphasize with the people I counsel, like I said, you know, and a lot of the work that we do is tell me your story. Tell me who you are. And more than that, tell me who told the stories in your family. Who are the ones that kept record of everything? Who are the ones from, you know, every time you were out there and picnics and family gatherings and get-togethers and holidays and so forth, you would hear the same stories over and over and over again. You know, and it's just almost like, you know, by the time you were 10, 11, 12, you've heard those stories 1,000 times. And you could even tell those stories, but you had to tell the story correctly. You know, you had to use the same inflection that of the story that was told to you. You had to pause at the right places. Otherwise, you're not telling the story correctly. And maybe even some people just, you got to stop and pause or get angry, or that's the time when everybody cries or something. You know, it's like, how do we tell the story is at times maybe more important than, you know, facts and figures. Maybe. So again, you know, what are the stories that your lineages carry? You know, and what stories are you trying to get out for that keep you emotionally and psychologically tied to woundedness? You can do this, but how is it done? Well, there was an Australian-born physician, psychotherapist, and pioneer of individual psychology. And I'm talking about the one and only Alfred Adler. Now, Adler lived 1870, I think he was born, and then he died in 1937, okay? And Adler had this theory where he believed that family stories, personal, individualized stories, not only provide the form to our earliest memories, but also that these stories became a blueprint of how we live our lives in relation to others. And he has this technique called earliest memories. And what you do is you start with your earliest memories, however far back you can go. Some people can go back to 4 years old, some people three, some people maybe even two, you know. And you start by writing that story out, how much you remember, all of it. At the end of, like, I can't write anymore because that's all I remember, you draw a line underneath, and then you fill in the blank with these four statements. Let's say as a four-year-old, I am whatever. Others are, okay, fill in the blank, the world is, and then therefore I will. Yeah, and we do that for about four earliest memories, and then we do a memory from adolescence, and then we do a memory, let's say, from early adulthood, and then we do a most recent memory from like maybe a week or two ago. But after each time we write down whatever the memory is, we fill in the blank. Like, so let's say I'm 18 and I tell a story I remember. You know, as an 18-year-old, I am, others are, the world is, and therefore, I will. And after a while, we begin to see a pattern of how we perceive ourselves, how we interact with one another, how we view the world at large, as well as what kind of action or behavior did that invoke in us. So, you know, part of our healing from our past and remembering our lineage stories involves us telling our stories, but also involves reclaiming our empowerment to rewrite our stories that are now life empowering and affirming. And I'm not saying that we achieve this empowerment from like an embellished delusional view that nicely ties up stories in a bow. That's just not how our memories work. We're always going to remember the facts and the figures and what happened and so forth. However, one thing I really like about these earliest memories is that we can really take notice to our healing, because we're going to still tell our stories, but we're now going to be able to tell our stories from a place of healing, a healthier perspective. Okay. So let's say, you know, I tell a story as an 18-year-old, okay? And in the past, I used to say, I am, others are, the world is, therefore I will, okay? I have all that information. But now in my, let's say, I'm 60 years old, you know, I can tell that 18-year-old story. And I guarantee you, I am going to answer, I am, others are, the world is, therefore I will. I'm going to answer those statements differently. Because I've healed from, let's say, the adolescence, or I've healed from all those early childhood memories. And so now I'm telling the story from a healthier perspective. So we can tell our stories with facts and figures and so forth, but, and we have to include the but, because there's, whenever there's healing, there's always a, and there's more to the story. We tell our stories from a healthier perspective. Now, granted, we may not be able to recall every experience, but for those memories that stand out to us, you know, they once served as our unconscious logic about how we see ourselves in relationship with others and the motivation for our behaviors today. But the first thing we need to do is how we tell our stories. How do we tell our stories? Well, speaking of stories, I really want to hear your story and what's on your mind about this subject. So again, if you want to call in, this number is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And I'll be taking your calls after the break. Again, you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity, and I'm your host, Dr. James Houck. I'll be back with you in 1 minute. Right. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Dr. James Houck, and you're listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. Now, if you're with me in the first half of the show, I talked about the need for all of us to better understand our family tree, our genealogy, whether or not you are related to Sir Isaac Newton. Okay, kind of a fascinating story. Whether or not he got bopped in the head by a falling apple, who knows? Who knows? But it started this intellectual curiosity, this scientific curiosity, which led him to discover greater things. And we certainly benefit from that today. But, you know, regarding our family trees, our genealogy, you know, we, because we are human beings, we are great story carriers. We hold the stories. Where we hold those stories is another matter, but we carry the stories. And not just about our families. We carry the stories about ourselves and everybody we've interacted with and so on and so forth. And this is something that I really emphasize with the people I counsel who are just stuck in one traumatic cycle after another. You know, they're trying to get out from, you know, their family stories that keep them emotionally and psychologically tied to their woundedness. Now, part of our healing, as I said in the past, you know, involves telling our stories, yes, but it also involves reclaiming our empowerment to be able to rewrite our stories that are now told from a place in us that is more life empowering and affirming. And we don't, simply achieve this empowerment from an embellished delusional view that nicely ties up stories in a bow. Instead, it's very, very intentional, because as we heal, we tell our stories now from a healthier perspective, a place of one's healing. Whereas perhaps before, we were telling our stories from a place of woundedness. and the stories that have been passed down to us came from a place of woundedness, or came from a family who just generation after generation after generation saw themselves as victims. And they never believed that they could be empowered. And this is something that I really love to emphasize with the kids I counsel. I counsel kids and teenagers and adults of all ages, but I mean, it's something about the kids, they really eat this up. Because just picture this, all right? Typically, whenever I get kids in a counseling setting, you know, it never, never fails. Because one, they're told they have to be there, okay? For one reason or another, you will meet with the therapist. And it doesn't take me long to hear these kids complain. Like, everybody blames me. Everybody thinks I'm stupid. Everybody, you know, it's just they're just not valued for who they are, and they know it. And they just want to be seen and heard for who they are, not what they do or don't do, or the mistakes they made, or the things that they do well, and so forth. Those things, you know, everybody likes to get those affirmations. But typically the kids I get are the ones who are like, okay, I'm told I'm the problem of the family. I'm like, really? All right, well, we'll see about that. But thanks for being honest and everything. And the more we talk and more we develop this therapeutic alliance, this therapeutic relationship, that's called in the business, the more I get to know them. And I point out to them all the good things that they have going for them, the things that they talk about. And I want to hear their passions. I want to hear the things that they want to try. I want to hear the ways in which they want to be seen and heard and held, because it's all part of it. And I want them to tell me their stories. And trust me, they know all the family stories by heart. Like I said, they heard them enough times in different family get-togethers and so forth. So they tell me their stories. And sooner or later, sooner rather than later, I should say, it dawns on them of as to really why they are there. You know, because as we're talking about healing the generations, and let's talk about healing mom and dad and grandma and grandpa and great grandma and grandpa, and let's keep going back. And, you know, I love it when they bring in like genealogy stuff. I'm like, hey, yeah, my mom collected all this stuff, and they share that with me. And they see the patterns that were handed down through the generations. And they start to connect the dots. And they go, you know, it seems like all this garbage didn't start with me. So why in the world do I have to be the one that sits with you? And I know that they got it. I know. And that's usually when I get a big smile on my face and it's like, kid, let me have you come in on a very big secret. Have you ever thought about the fact that you're not the problem in the family, but rather maybe you're the solution? You know, maybe you're the strongest one in the family that's going to be able to heal not just yourself, but also heal the family going backwards, so to speak, as well as not allowing all this nonsense and garbage and toxicity and dysfunction from going forward anymore. And when they get it, they get this big smile on their face because it's the first time in their life, perhaps, that they feel empowered. And they typically say, cool, I'm the strongest one in the family. Like, you always have been. You just didn't realize it. And, you know, they're like, well, that explains everything. You know, like, okay, just, you know, pump the brakes there, kid. You know, we have a lot to discuss, but I want you to keep in mind, you're not the problem. You're the solution. And I tell you, it changes their perspective. It doesn't just empower them. It enhances their self-esteem. And they start to tell their stories differently because they got a glimpse of what health looks like. You know, the moments of the stories that they tell, even from a young age, you know, why those particular stories and not other ones. Again, it's this unconscious logic about how they see themselves or their relationship with others or their motivation for what they do, you know, their behaviors and so forth. But when they find out and they embrace the fact that they are now the strongest ones in the family to be able to heal the family, watch out, you know, because when they heal, turn them loose, because they're going to send healing energy all throughout the family, all throughout the family. So this is why knowing one's genealogy is so important, because not in a linear sense, you know, like because knowing your past and who's in your past can provide a means of healing your present and your future. But think of more of, you know, knowing your own genealogy and healing from that sends out that energy like a sparkler. You know, you light a sparkler on the 4th of July and like all the light goes out in all different directions. The healing cuts across all time and space. It just goes out. And every relationship that people have from a healed perspective is life-changing. It's transformative because they have been transformed and are being transformed. Well, if you've ever seen the movie Frozen, and I'm sorry if I put the song in your head, what are you going to do? It's still a great song, okay? Frozen. Perhaps you're aware that the movie is a variation of Hans Christian Andersen's children's story, The Snow Queen. And Andersen wrote this story around 1845, okay, definitely pre-Civil War. And in Andersen's story, he has, that's the main character, an evil troll, that is the devil, okay, let's call it for what it is. He uses a very large magic mirror, you know, picture like a funhouse mirror at carnivals, to distort the images of everything it reflects. And this mirror was designed this way, you know, it wasn't designed to reflect the wholesome and beautiful aspects of people and things, but it only instead magnified their ugly and wicked characteristics. Now, throughout this story, this troll, that is the devil, he becomes very amused in distorting the images and everyone and everything, to the degree, as Andersen describes it, that even the most beautiful lands look like boiled spinach. And, you know, the troll, aka the devil, he got a little excited that he was doing this and just laughed at everybody's expense. Okay. However, one day, this troll, that is the devil, with the help of his little minions, you know, he decided, let's carry this mirror up into heavens and let's try to make fools of the angels. And let's also try to make a fool out of God, you know. However, as they're flying up to heaven, however far that is, you know, they're holding onto this mirror and it slips from their grasp and it falls back to the earth and it shatters into billions of pieces. And these tiny shards of the mirror are then blown by the wind all over the earth, which get into people's eyes and their hearts, kind of like dust, but it really distorts. You know, and as a result, the people's hearts become frozen. There it is, becomes frozen like ice. And their eyes can now only see the ugliness and evil in each other and the world in which they live. Well, ironically, past wounds are just like the shards of distorted perceptions of who we truly are as souls, as well as what freezes our hearts from seeing the beauty and goodness in ourselves and others. And for people who struggle with intergenerational wounds and intergenerational trauma, people who have suffered crimes against humanity, society has often held up its own mirrors of misleading standards. Sometimes intentionally, sometimes unintentionally. But nevertheless, the shards of illusion are intentionally designed to add generational distortions to the eyes and the hearts of the weak and the wounded. And over time, our minds tell us that whatever we see, albeit limited and hazy, well, that must be true. And whatever we've heard about ourselves down through these stories, well, That must be true. Okay? And we tend to believe it. And we tend to believe the horrific stories and so on and so forth. And even in severe cases, trauma can actually be passed down genetically. Trauma, the energy attached to it, attaches to our DNA and often covertly disguises itself as very harmful physical, psychological, emotional, and spiritual symptoms. And similarly, as intergenerational trauma is passed down through societies and families, that is, what we carry in our genes, how we are and how we were raised, and so forth, various social systems and so on and so forth, also galvanize harmful stereotypes. It also galvanizes prejudices and injustices, emotional dependence, and other biases out there that have just been handed down because, well, that's the way it's always been. Now, intergenerational trauma is not just limited to how it affects our families, but it affects all relationships, from the most intimate to mere acquaintances in our lives. And this realization is a significant aspect of our healing relationships. It occurs when we can just understand, become aware that what has wounded another person, what has so wounded ourselves as to allow us to continuously act out of our woundedness, and yet at the same time, we want to expect different results. And I have to say from personal experience that by understanding the background of those who have hurt me growing up and throughout my life, it really allowed me to take the necessary steps closer to forgiving and releasing the burdens of carrying around my wounds any longer. And same is true when we forgive another person. We're actually telling them that we no longer want to carry the weight of their wounds. We want them to also be unburdened by any weight of bitterness or unforgiveness or any shame that they're carrying or humiliation or whatever pain they have suffered from in the past that continues to influence how they think or say and act in harmful ways. See, this behavior and the emotional and psychological, what I call self-inflicted wounds, come from. And again, it's just, I find it very easy to explain this to kids because they want to know about this stuff. And so I just say, think about it this way. You know, we think that if we say something bad or we say something harmful or we do something harmful, it's never going to come back on us. But it does. Because I tell them, like, look, we live in an echo. It's like we live in a tunnel. You know, and they all love that concept. You know, they just go, hello. And, you know, then, you know, the echo reverberates the sound of their voice back to them. I go, it's the same thing because sound is energy. Words carry with it energy. And so whatever we send out is going to come back to us. And that could be anything negative. That could be anything positive. That can be something horrific. That could be something very beautiful. It all comes back to us. But every negative thought, everything negative we say, every negative thing we do comes back to us. And it does reinforce the wounded parts of ourselves. And we have many ways to understand this concept. You may not even be aware of it, but how many of you have often said, well, you know, what goes around comes around. Or what you sow, you will reap. And even karma. Karma is another way to understand that, matter how you say it, humanity lives in an echo. That what goes out from us will return to us, just like we hear the sound of our voice echoing back in our ears when we're in this tunnel. Everything we think and say and do is energy. And unless we transform this energy through healing our wounds, it's going to come back to us exactly how it went out from us. So how do we transform this negative energy? Well, it begins with healing ourselves. And to take this concept to the heart of the matter, so to speak, the way we can find healing is to begin asking ourselves, really, who am I? I mean, who am I, really? Not just what I do, not just what's on my driver's license, but strip away all that stuff. Who am I? Who am I as a soul? What is it that God saw before I was formed into this body? See, because beneath all the external facades and beneath all of the pretense and outward appearances, who are we at our core? My teacher is often fond of saying that most people think that any undesirable situation is due to the behaviors of others. So, in other words, they do not want to accept responsibility for their thoughts and words and actions. Furthermore, perspective is a result of our mind's doing, which, again, interprets everything that we take in through our five senses of sight, sound, smell, touch, and taste. And it's simply caused by the weakness of the mind and the absorption of, let's say, negative thoughts. So, for example, if you think you're weak, you're going to become weak. If you think you're a victim, well, you're going to become a victim. But if you think yourself strong, then you are strong. Most people have accepted their inner weakness to the point that they are attached to them. Then they don't want to come out of their self-created illusions. Thoughts are that powerful. But you know, maybe looking at ourselves more closely and examining our motives and assumptions and our limited perspectives, we just might realize the first step towards lasting transformation is to first acknowledge the illusions of oppression and limited understandings are all a result of what's in our minds. You know, in other words, we might be in a physical prison, but if we find our true nature, that we are eternal souls, then no amount of earthly limitation can convince us that we're limited or that we're inadequate or that we are restricted. Yeah, my dear Indian friends, you know, from India, they understand that people are already in a relationship with all things and all people, including God. However, you just don't know it yet. Therefore, it's a matter of realizing that we are souls that are vast and formless. In fact, I've had great conversations with my friends in India. We have an interesting conversation about sin and ignorance. And whereas other people see sin as people being good or evil or they do bad things or something, my India friends say, you know, people are going to act out of their ignorance of who they are. And of course, they don't know their connection with all things and all people and God. And so it's no surprise they're going to commit evil acts, because they have not realized themselves and others as souls. And echoing this sentiment, one of my other teachers, Joseph Rael, in a recently published work entitled Becoming Medicine, Pathways of Initiation into Living Spirituality, he wrote, "The way you become a medicine person is that you practice who you are, because you're already medicine. No one gives it to you. You're already it. So what a gift to yourself and to your family and to the world when you realize you are already medicine for others. We just have to work on clearing out everything that gets in the way of that medicine in terms of our unresolved emotional, psychological, physical, and spiritual woundedness. And yes, we have to work on our relationships that have occurred in the past. Yes, we have to work on resolving our differences, our pain, our bitterness, our egos, and our forgiveness. So in order for us to fully embrace ourselves as medicine for ourselves, medicine for others, we're going to have to come to terms with everything that has brought us to even this very moment in our lives. In fact, there is so much more to us than what we have become so far. And this is exactly what reclaiming authenticity is all about. Having the courage to be able to reclaim that which has always been in you and that which you have always been and are. Thank you for spending this hour with me. I'm Dr. James Houck, and you have been listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. Again, everybody, have a good 2 weeks until we talk again. And everybody be safe out there. Everybody behave themselves. And work on your family tree. You know, interesting things that we find there. And we can actually heal ourselves the more we know about our family trees. So for now, everybody, have a good night. Bye-bye.
For an answer, or just to leave 1,000 comments, or prodding around to buy a book by Dr. Houck, it's all there. Just wander over to ReclaimingAuthenticity.com and click around. And we'll see you next Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 6 p.m. Pacific, on BBS Radio TV.